Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast, and I am your host, Frankie D. And my guest today is Ralph Amelio, a film historian, a teacher, an author, and just an overall general interesting person. Ralph, welcome to the show. I appreciate you being here. Before we get into all that, and we're going to discuss The Godfather in more in detail, tell me about your background here in Chicago.
Okay, Frankie, thank you very much for the invitation. I've been a film teacher for, I'm 79, quite a few years. I came from the south, west side of Chicago, around Kedzie and Van Buren, Our Lady of Sorrows Catholic Church. I was raised there for 8 years.
Was it a heavily populated Italian
heavily
area?
A heavily populated Italian and Irish.
Oh, really?
A lot of great battles there.
I can imagine.
I went to a Roman Catholic seminary, Mater Dolorosa Seminary, and out of graduate school. I was in the seminary for 6 years, studying to be a priest. I eventually left in my second year of college and went to Loyola University, where I got a bachelor's degree in humanities at Loyola, and then a master's degree in English at Loyola. And I was always interested in film because my folks who lived on the west side used to take us to the neighborhood theaters, the Harrison Theater, the Kedzie Theater. And my mother used to go every Sunday because she liked the dishes they used to give. They used to give free dishes.
They did?
Yeah, after the show.
And how much did a ticket cost in those days?
Oh, my God, it was about 10 or 15 cents.
10 or 15 cents.
And then I used to go by myself. We used to sneak in anyway, but one guy would pay and then open the side door, and then 15 guys would race in. So we got to see all the cartoons and all the Westerns, especially in the gangster films.
And was this the days, I'm just guessing, when you really didn't have televisions in the house?
Right, right.
So, I mean, to go to a movie theater,
that was a big deal. Yeah, going downtown to the Chicago Theater, the Roosevelt Theater, all those different theaters were, and you know, we went by ourselves, too. It was only 15 cents, you know, to get on the L then. And so we saw a lot of good films as a group of kids. And we were rambunctious kids then, too. So we saw what we can do. But I was always interested in film at that point. And when I started to teach at Willowbrook High School in Villa Park in 1961, I was teaching English. And I always liked to use films because, number one, they were interesting to the kids. They weren't just, you know, looking, reading at books. But I saw that a lot of the themes and characters, the humanistic presentations of ideas were available in film. So I started to use things like On the Waterfront, for example, and short films. And then eventually some money was available from the state, I found out, after going to a friend of mine's film classes in Notre Dame, Father Paul Carrico, and he had a film course there, one semester course, and I said, well, let's try it at Willowbrook. So I talked to my principal, and he was able to get us some funding money, about $1,000 for the rental of films. And so we started a film course in 67, 68, and that was two semesters. And I taught it with a team of another English teacher, an art person, and then in one class by myself.
Was that a unique thing in those days? Like, just, not many high schools?
No, they're just an example. A few of the Catholic schools, that they were way ahead of everybody else. But the public schools had nothing at all. So we started the film class, and that was the subject of this one book here, Film in the Classroom. I go into a lot of details about that. And the second year, we had three classes of 60 with two teachers and a consultant, and we broke down the course into types of film, Western film, gangster film, musicals. We had a whole unit on just film rhetoric, Citizen Kane.
So this went over quite well. Oh, yeah, it was popular with the kids.
The kids were very, they thought it was going to be a breeze, but then they came into the class and they found out, number one, they had to read because we had articles that accompanied the film. We had two books as background, and they had to write about the films, which was, you know, difficult enough. And the writing was similar to the kinds of writing that you do when you're studying short story or a novel. So they find out that it wasn't just, you know, peaches and cream. And so we taught the course, basically showing the films. We had lectures, but more we had discussions. And once we had the discussions, the students found out that they had something to say that was relevant to the film itself, and we challenged them in that way too. Some students wanted to make films. We allowed them to do that. That was just an extra thing that they wanted. But for the most part, it was viewing films carefully, talking about them intensely, and then seeing films outside of class too. So that went on for quite a few years. This other fellow, John Mustache, and I basically taught the course, and then due to budget constrictions, we had to cut back. So later on, I was just teaching the course by myself with maybe 30, 35 students. But over the years, I had about 10,000 students that I taught film. Because the classes were so large.
That's a huge number.
Yeah, I mean, one year we had five classes of 65, so that's a lot of kids.
That is a lot. And how did you come to pick which films?
Well, we looked at the films, number one, because if they were relevant to the kids. For example, Francois Truffaut's film, The 400 Blows, deals with a young kid who is just messed up by his family, and he's by himself. And how does he survive? Okay.
And were these current films at that time?
At that time, no. They were most of the films came out of the classic period of the 60s. I mean, when you look at some of the great films from Europe, by the way, came out of the 60s. The whole French New Wave and the Italian neorealism. And then, of course, we chose some great American films too. We did On the Waterfront, which is really a popular film. The kids really enjoyed that. We did some great Westerns. The Searchers, we showed almost every year because it's one of the classic John Ford films. We did Fellini films. As I mentioned, we did La Strada, Knights of Cabiri, another great film. The Maltese Falcon, The Treasure of Sierra Madre.
So you would show the film in class,
right,
and then they would write about it?
Right. We would give them, almost every one of the films had discussion questions. So we'd give the discussion questions. They usually get a chance to choose out of 10 questions, maybe two, that they could write about or bring up for discussion, and we would talk about those films. Or if they had questions that weren't on the discussion sheets, they just ask, hey, what happened in the film? I didn't understand. So we get basic plot things.
Would you talk about behind the scenes about picking certain actors, actresses,
things
of that nature?
Right, yeah. For example, today I was talking about Hitchcock and how he chose his actors and actresses, and he didn't brook any discussion. You're going to do it this way, and no ifs, and Paul Newman. Paul Newman took it on the chin because he wanted to do scene after scene again, retakes, and Hitchcock said, shut up, and you'll do it this way.
Is that right?
So that kind of stuff. I mean,
okay.
We talked about behind the scenes stuff too. But basically, we concentrated on the film itself. we used in one year we used 80 feature films and about 20 short films. The short films were great because we could show them in one 55-minute period and then talk about it then. The feature films, it was more difficult because we have 55-minute periods, so I had to show...
You showed 80 feature films in a year?
In a year, so we
use... That's a lot.
Introduction Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'd show the film, and then Friday would be the quiz discussion day, too. By the way, we had quizzes on the film, too, on how carefully they observe.
It sounds like a great class.
Yeah, so they were...
I'm sure it wasn't easy, but it sounds like a very interesting class.
They were fascinated. They participated well. I could tell you, I had all seniors, by the way, and it was an elective course. They chose the course.
Right.
Because we had no senior requirement. But I never had one discipline problem in any one of those kids. I mean, shut up or whatever.
Sure.
But they just watched the films, participated, and did a good job. And I still see a lot of these kids, even today all over the city.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah.
Do they still have today in public high schools?
Yeah, the course that I originated at Willowbrook still exists today. There's at least...
It does.
There's one fellow who's teaching at least two sections of it. That's all that I know of at Willowbrook. Some other schools, Barrington has a course, I think, and that's about it. I don't know other schools. I don't know of any of the Catholic schools because they can't afford the
films. They probably can't afford
it. That's it.
To teach it, do you need a film background, or is it more of an English teacher?
My background, I took courses all over the place. I took courses at Northwestern. I took courses at UCLA, University of Southern California.
This was after college,
after I got my master's in English.
After you got your master's, you continued taking courses.
I took 60 hours of courses afterwards.
60?
60 all over the
country. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I made it my business to know what I was going to know. I don't have a degree in film.
And that would be the place to go,
be in Northwestern California. Would be the place, California. New York University would be another place too.
Oh, okay.
But there are a lot of colleges that have programs in film. I didn't know about the program at Loyola. I don't know what they're doing with film. They have an actual series of courses in a curriculum where you get a degree. I don't know. But the Northwestern has had that for years. University of Chicago has had it for years. And I've taken specific courses at those particular places.
Very impressive.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So I mean, You know, I think you have to go to school to know something. I mean, I think when the kids came to the course, they thought, well, yeah, let's look at the film and have a lot of fun. But they don't realize that there's a lot of stuff that goes into those films.
Absolutely.
That you have masters in cinematography and music and composition and
right.
so forth, and you have to know something about it. And that one of the things they really started to learn. I mean, when we showed Citizen Kane, for example, in the first 6 weeks of the course, I mean, we took that film apart. I had... Well, laser disc, which you can freeze the frame. So I used to freeze the frames and say, okay, now let's take a look at this scene. Why is the camera here?
And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that always considered the greatest movie
right.
ever?
And we give them an opportunity to discuss why. I mean, don't take it just for me. Let's take a look at it.
And just so I'm understanding, is that the film about based on William Randolph Hearst?
Well,
correct?
Loosely.
Loosely based
loosely.
On William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah. We used Citizen Kane, for example, at the beginning of the year in September, and we had them write about it, and they couldn't write much about it, and then showed the film carefully, went over it, and then as our final exam in June, we showed the same film again and had them write about it, and they just went on for reams and reams.
But this was back in the 60s?
Well,
that you showed
we
this
started
film?
The course in 67.
No, but actually Citizen Kane?
Oh, no, Citizen Kane's go back to 41. That's when the
when
film
did you made. Show the film, though, in the 60s to your students?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because
yeah. I'm just thinking... Today's kid, I don't know.
No.
You couldn't show Citizen Kane because
no,
it would be
it's
like
too boring.
It'd be another world for
yeah,
them.
Yeah, and they had to learn that. They had to learn that.
Hey, it'd be the wrong color because it's black and white. And
well,
I mean, honestly, kids would black and white would freak them out.
Yeah.
And then just I think just the whole life and the whole way it was. That was such a long time ago.
Well, that's the historical bearing that the kids have to know about. I mean, in order to understand the film, you have to know stuff. I mean, you have to, you know, if you're watching a historical film about Iwo Jima, you know, well, what's Iwo Jima?
What's
what
Iwo Jima,
you know,
right?
You know, well, you have to tell stuff about we're in World War II. There was a very important
sure.
island. They had to use it for aerial bases to get Japan. I mean, you have to get some. So that was a good thing about my buddy, John. Was not, he was social science. So he had all the background on history
oh,
and
so
politics.
Well
and
together.
So that worked well. And he was in psychology, too. And then this other fellow, Dave Knipper, his background was a solid art teacher. So he would come in and talk about composition and color and so forth. And my background was mostly literary and filmic, too. So we would combine. We would take some kids who wanted to go with me one day and wanted to go with the other teacher one day. They could. So they had changed. And we also had a second floor library where we had all kinds of filmic magazines, we had editors and cameras and so forth, so kids wanted to work on their own by themselves on making a film, they could work by themselves too with the art teacher. So,
did anyone that you know of, one of your former students, pursue a career in some regards in film?
Oh yeah, the fellow who was chairperson of the DuPage College of DuPage, chairman of the art department, Tony Venezia. He's made a number of films which have won prizes.
Short, one of your former students?
Short films, yeah.
Wow.
Another Italian, by
Italian,
the way.
Italian, I like it.
But
okay.
Good person. He was out in California for a while, had his own business, then left, came here, became chairperson, and he's still there at College of DuPage.
That's great. Okay, so you taught at Willowbrook High School. Please.
Hold on a second.
Yes. So you taught at Willowbrook High School for 39 years.
38 years.
And then you said you taught at National
College.
Lewis National
Lewis
College.
Yeah.
For how many years?
25. So I was teaching.
So 38 plus 25?
No, during.
Oh, during.
So
I was going to say.
Oh,
my God.
So when I have classes at Willowbrook during the day, I would finish at 3. And then we had a night class.
Oh, I see.
From 5 at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
But
okay.
I was there for 25 years.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. Okay, and you wrote books. Tell me about some of your books that you wrote.
Well, the first book, Film in the Classroom, because we had gotten money from the state, I thought, well, let me document this. And so what I did is I documented the film, the course itself, and I told about each unit that we used, what we did, where we got the money, where we got the films.
And this was done back in...
This was done, the first one actually is earlier than this, is 68.
68?
68, yeah.
Okay.
This one, I'd have to check here. This one is... This is 71.
Okay.
And this is more complete. And this was an important book because this is when the film surge in schools was really taking off. And so this became kind of a documentary way of, if you wanted to start a film course, here's a way to do it. it's not the way, it's a way.
Right.
And so a lot of, this was a very best-selling book for quite a while. It didn't make much money.
That's great.
But it sold a lot of copies. It sold about 6,000 copies. And a lot of teachers liked the book because it was very practical, because I told them, hey, we tried this, it worked, we tried this, and it didn't work. Well, this is the reason we chose this film. So that was that. And then a few years after that, since science fiction was so popular, I decided to make a book in which I would have basic articles to use if you were doing a science fiction unit. And so I got permission from about 9 authors, big people in science fiction, to use their articles and paid them for that. And then in addition to that, I made up a filmography of short films and feature films that you could use in a science fiction class. So that was the second book. And then the last one was interesting because we had the cooperation of Films Inc., which was the largest film rental company in the country, and two of the most prestigious teachers in film, Paddy Winnell from the British Film Institute. He was visiting here at Northwestern, and he was in the film department, and Stu Kaminsky was one of the really great teachers. He's a writer of about 50 books, and he was a great film teacher. He passed away recently. So those two teachers and I, representing high schools, we got together, and Films Inc. gave us open use to any film we wanted.
Really?
And so we looked at about 200 films, and we finally broke it down to 12 films, which we took extracts from. So we took extracts from My Darling Clementine, The Godfather, Day the Earth Stood Still, War of the Worlds, Jekyll and Hyde, King Kong, Murder, My Sweet, St. Valentine's Massacre, Gay Divorcee, Singing in the Rain, and Buster Keaton's The Cameraman, and Howard Hawks' Monkey Business. So we took 15-minute excerpts from that, described the extract, and then we gave ways in which that could be used in the classroom, bibliography and techniques. And so out of that, I was charged with writing the book, which I did by myself, and then that finally came out. It was called The Filmic Moment.
In other words, Filmic Moment.
We took an extract from
all of those films.
Yeah.
Well, that's excellent. That's great. Yeah. You are a very knowledgeable individual.
That was a hard work.
I can imagine.
Going from here to Evanston is no easy trip.
No, there isn't.
All kinds of trip.
It is
and then
not.
They gave us the films, and so we had to watch all of those films.
Right.
So either at home with my wife watching all those 16-millimeter films, and then we had to make the decisions among the three of us about what extract should we
what
use.
What you want to
what
put
you
in,
like about
sure.
This. And we finally agreed. And I was working with two really great guys. I mean, I was doing more listening and analyzing, so that was a great experience for me. It was a terrific. It was like having your personal tutor,
right?
You know, with these films, and so that worked out very well. But then Films Inc., 60mm went down the drain, and nobody's using 60mm, so they went into laser discs, and now we have CDs.
Sure.
So I don't even know if these exist in CDs anymore.
I'm guessing
it would be nice because they were good teaching devices.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, before we talk about The Godfather, tell me about where's the family from in Italy? I forgot to ask.
Well, the family, my father was from San Pietro Maggiano in Calabria. It's a small town. And his mother and father were born there. He was born there. He had two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother. My father came to Italy, came from Italy to Chicago, at which time my grandfather had a shoe store. So my father became a shoe repairman.
Really?
He was on Wabash and Harrison for almost 50 years. My mother was born here in America. She was from an Italian family. Her family came from Cosenza.
Oh, right, from Cosenza,
She had six.
Six siblings?
Six siblings.
So you were all Calabrese?
Oh, yeah, they were all great, all his uncles.
And did you ever have an opportunity to go to Calabria?
No.
My wife
and I had an opportunity to go to France. I had an opportunity to go to France to teach at the University of Toulouse for UNICEF. And that was an international meeting. And that was really great because I got to meet a lot of different people from all over the world. So I taught the course there for 4 days. And then eventually we went to Italy. And that was terrific, too, because we went to Rome. We took a bus tour, mostly northern Italy. I never did get to southern Italy, which I would have liked to, but we just didn't make it. But that was a great trip.
You enjoyed it out there?
Oh, I enjoyed it. We went in the heat of the summer, but that was a great trip.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay, I know that you showed The Godfather at one of your films. Tell me stuff about The Godfather perhaps I wouldn't know. Because I know you know all about it.
Okay, well, here it is. The director of the film, Francis Ford Coppola, was in huge debt. He had made an earlier film, and he had to pay back the suitors for the film, the guys who put up the money, and didn't have any money. So his wife had read the book, and she says, "Why not tackle this?" And he says, "Oh," he says, "that's just a pot boiler. That's just a pot boiler. It's just."
He was alive at the time, Mario Puzo.
And so she convinced him to, you know, contact the studios, and the studios, you know, contacted Puzo. They gave him quite a bit of money. And both Puzo and Coppola cooperated on making the first film. It was a very difficult day-to-day thing because the investors at Paramount wanted to fire him every day because he didn't have any, they thought didn't have the moxie to make the film.
And so at that point, he wasn't a big-time director.
No. He had done the script for Patton, which was a big thing, but he really didn't make any successful films up to that point. And so every day that he was on the set, he had guys, from Paramount who were looking to fire him. And the slightest thing that he did wrong, he said, he was always looking over his shoulder and scared about, they wouldn't allow him a free choice in making the casting. He had a hell of a time getting Pacino. They didn't want Pacino in it.
Because Pacino was an unknown at
that time. Well, Pacino was relatively, he had done a few films before that and was, a decent actor, but they didn't think he was right for this big blockbuster. Khan, for example, they wanted Khan to play the Pacino part. He didn't want that. So he had a hard time with the casting. And eventually, once he got the casting straight on and started to make the film, in the first few weeks, it was kind of touch and go. But then eventually Paramount gave him, the go to do the film. So he did the film, and he wasn't successful with it, in his opinion, because it seemed to put down the Italians again. That they're violent people, they're gangsters.
Oh, he thought that.
Yeah, he didn't want that to be. He wanted to show the benefits of a beautiful family, of the loyalty within the family. But at the same time, too, when the film came out, here it is, the praise all went to, wow, what a violent film this is. You know, you see that baptismal sequence, and here it is, the babies being baptized and all the
but
five families.
But in a way, though, how could you make a film about that subject without it being
exactly
about violence and about...
Exactly. But Coppola himself felt that the critics were looking at the violence of the film instead of looking at other elements of the film. So he was somewhat disappointed in that. So then they had a time, trying to convince him to make the second Godfather. Well, again, he needed money. Coppola always needed money because he owned a film studio and he'd give money to everybody.
Was the first one a success initially?
Oh, yes. The first one was a huge success.
So it made money.
Made tons of money. And because it made tons of money, Paramount was interested again. Let's make a sequel. So the film
was it an expensive film to make?
Oh,
the
yeah.
First
very,
one?
Very expensive
it
film.
It was.
It was. Yeah, very expensive film to make. They had to rent that mansion where they had the big party at the beginning of the film. And a lot of the special effects were very difficult. The actors wanted big money.
Well, I was going to say, was it difficult to get Brando?
Brando, they didn't want at all. Brando was a huge failure as an actor because he kept causing, for example, Mutiny on the Bounty. He kept causing the studios millions of dollars by just fooling around. He wouldn't memorize lines. He never would memorize lines. Even in Godfather, he refused to memorize the lines. They had to put the script, pieces of the script, all over.
Is that right?
Yeah, he would read them on plasterboards over here. And it got so bad that they tell the story that, because he was always reading the lines. I don't know if you remember the big bodyguard in the film.
Luca Brasi,
okay.
Sure.
So they were
Lenny Montana?
Yeah. They were having a time with Lenny Montana because Lenny Montana was very fearful working with Marlon Brando, the great Marlon Brando. So when he makes that first scene to see the Godfather.
In the wedding scene, right?
Yeah, in the wedding sequence. Marlon Brando's there, and Lenny doesn't know what to say, so he opens his mouth, and on his tongue, he's got a piece of paper that says, "Fuck you." Marlon Brando hits the floor. He was just dying with laughter. So they finally got the scene done, and then the next day they do it again. And Marlon Brando confronts Luca Brasi, and this time Marlon Brando's got on his tongue tape, white tape, fuck you too.
So, wow.
I mean, they had a lot of fun. I guess Marlon Brando was throughout the whole film mooning people. But he had a hard time, Coppola had a hard time convincing the Paramount people that Brando was the guy that they needed. And Coppola,
well, at that time, was he the biggest name in the film?
Brando?
Yes.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But the thing is, he had this terrible reputation because he kept losing money in these big films. Mutiny on the Bounty was a disaster a few years before. So the Paramount people didn't want anything to do with him.
Do you recall some of the other choices?
Well,
for that part?
They had some other characters. They wanted Robert Redford. I mean, would you believe that?
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I can't believe that.
Robert Redford to play Vito Corleone?
Yeah, because he has a big name. And, you know, no, what are you talking about? Coppola was saying, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that would have been a whole
Richard choice. Conte, which
he
had a big name,
perhaps.
And he was Italian, you know. They had a bunch of other characters. I can look those up for you. But I was going to get into Marlon Brando was only hired because Coppola said, okay, we'll give you some conditions. We'll give you some conditions. So Paramount says, here's the conditions. Number one, you cannot interrupt the shooting of the film. This is to Brando, and Coppola told Brando this. Number two, you have to take a test. Well, Marlon Brando
says, about the lines
about
of the
lines,
film?
Yeah, about the whole film. And Coppola says, how am I going to tell this great actor? Did you have to take a test? So he just said, well, let's try a few scenes and fool around with it. And that's when Marlon Brando was kind of putting, you know, stuff in his cotton.
Didn't he
in his
put
mouth.
The cotton or a handkerchief or something?
Yeah. And when he came on to do the first test, Marlon Brando was just amazed because here it is, Brando came on and made all these changes in his face and had this raspy voice, you know, that these gangsters have and so forth. And then he said, Paramount also said, if you interrupt the scenes, you're going to have to pay a penalty. So he agreed to all.
He agreed
these,
to everything.
Yeah, he agreed to all these conditions.
They needed him, but didn't he need the part as well?
He definitely needed the part
because
he
his was, career was starting to go.
And he was in debt. He had about seven wives, and I don't know how many children.
Is that
he
right?
Had. Not by that time, but during the whole accumulation. So he was paying alimony, you know, all over the place. So he needed, you know, he needed money.
So he was just an incredibly talented actor.
Yeah, he was,
however, maybe the greatest guy or the most cooperative.
Right. Well, you go back to On the Waterfront and you see Marlon Brando as a young man there. That guy's a knockout. I mean, he's just perfect for that role. And Coppola felt that Brando was perfect for the role of
the Godfather.
He just did it. So they hired
good
him.
Good instinct.
And of course it worked out.
Sure.
I mean, you look at the role that he had in that particular film. He's just
as did most of the characters.
Oh,
I mean, Al Pacino for sure.
Oh, the casting is
James
just
Caan. I would say for sure.
Casale as the brother. I mean, and then all the way down the line. I mean, you got all. But then the problem was when they went into Godfather 2, you know, some of those actors. They wanted more money, and so they had trouble getting some of the same people back to the same.
But they basically did bring back everyone, correct?
Well, they did and they didn't. The guy who plays, I'm getting these names.
Which character?
Clemenza.
Richard Castellano.
Clemenza, Rich Castellano. They just couldn't get him to sign.
He wasn't in Godfather 2?
No, no.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't even realize that.
And
he was great.
He's great.
Godfather
he's perfect in that
yes.
one. You know, when he's making the sauce.
Yes.
Put a little bit of this, a little bit
absolutely.
Of that. I mean, it's just great. So they had a hard time. And then in the third Godfather, they couldn't get the adopted brother in there because he wanted the same kind of money. That
Robert Duvall,
he wanted the same kind of money that Al Pacino was getting, and Coppola just couldn't convince him, hey, this is going to make your career too, and he just didn't want to do it.
Do you think there'll be a Godfather 4?
Well, you know, I guess they've got the script done.
They do?
Yeah, they got the script done.
I was kidding.
I don't know if it's ever going to be made. I mean,
now, is Coppola, like, in need of money?
He's always in need of money.
He's always in need of money. Okay, well, you know what? When one's in need,
yeah, I mean,
they
tend
to keep making these things.
He's got this huge winery out in California and a mansion out there, and he's supporting all of his kids. And he supports a lot of other directors in small films. So he gives money away. And he's got a film studio, which he keeps losing money on. And it's not in Hollywood, so that's another... You know, he doesn't have the Hollywood backers. He's got his own individual backers, which is always a problem. And as great as his name is, you know, he still has trouble, you know, getting financing for films, which is too bad because, as far as I'm concerned, I think he's one of the greatest directors ever.
Really?
I think Godfather 2 is one of the best made films ever. It's got everything perfect, casting, themes,
Do you like Godfather 2 more than 1?
Yeah, yeah, I like Godfather 2. I do, because I think he's, in Godfather 2, he had much more of a budget. He had much more freedom to do the kind of things that he wanted to do, as opposed to the things that he had to do in Godfather 1. And Godfather 2 is a huge, huge financial success, and it's a huge critical success.
How many years after was it made?
That was 3 years. That was 74.
Plus, from what you're saying, if when he was making 1, if they were... You know, he was looking over his shoulder the entire time every day.
Yeah.
That's not healthy.
That's not healthy. So, I mean, he struck a huge financial deal with Paramount for the second one. And the one that he wanted most, and most directors wanted, is that they want complete control of the film. Casting, script, direction.
And he you was don't
get
that.
You don't get that. Not many directors. Hitchcock didn't even get that in a lot of his films. John Ford had trouble getting that. Orson Welles, that's why one of Citizen Kane is so unusual. Orson Welles was one of the youngest directors who ever got complete control of the film. Script, dialogue, direction, everything. And that was very unusual for a young director at that particular time. So that's a big deal.
A film study was done by the Italic Institute of America. It was completed in 2014, and it took 15 years to do. So what they did was they took total Italian-related films from 1914 to 2014. There were 1,512 films. Films which portrayed Italians in a positive light was 31.5%, or 476. In a negative light, 68.5%, or 1,036. Okay, so now individual categories. 1,512 films. Mob characters was almost 35%. Of that 35%, real mob characters, about real people, was only 13%, and then fake characters was 86%, 84%. They have a category called boors, buffoons. That was 33%, and then it was about 32% in a positive light. So now, more specifically, the influence of The Godfather, 1972 film. So, mob movies about mob characters prior to The Godfather, 1972, there were only 98 films made. Mm-hmm. It was 18.6%. After The Godfather, 1972, there were 430 films made with mob characters up until 2014. That's when the study ended. 81.4%. This is interesting. The total number, according to the 2010 U.S. Census, total number of Italian Americans, 17 million. 2010 U.S. Census. The total number of Italian criminals by the FBI statistics of 1999 was 1,150 out of 17 million, which makes up 0.0068%, which tells us a lot.
Right.
Because now Hollywood is depicting us almost every film in this criminal way, and 0.0068% of us are actual criminals. So the conclusions that this study came to was, the figures indicate an entrenched bias in Hollywood against Americans of Italian descent. The diversity of the Italian-American experience has been obscured by one-dimensional stereotypes equating Italian culture with criminality. With the success of The Godfather, 1972, these distorted images gained popular acceptance on an unprecedented scale. What do you think of that?
Well, I agree. And it's sad because, again, as I said, Coppola, in his intention for all three Godfather films, by the way, was not trying to show a negative image of Italians, even though that's what comes out. I think he was trying to show that there was a certain amount of loyalty, of family devotion, of the idea that these people can stick together and work together and do things together, even though they're in the business of crime.
Do you know, was Coppola and Mario Puzo on the same page making the film.
Yeah, yeah. They pretty much agreed almost scene by scene for the first book. They cut a lot of stuff out of the first book. A lot of the sexuality was cut. But for the most part, they were on the same boat on that. And neither of them felt that the film was depicting Italian Americans in a negative way. Now, the thing is, Hollywood doesn't care about that. Hollywood's out for money.
Money.
I mean, you saw the statistic after Godfather. You know, so many films were made with mob characters. Well,
because they realized that it was popular.
This brings in
it
bucks.
Made money.
And particularly, of course, that was a time from the 70s on where films in all genres were becoming more violent. You know, Bonnie and Clyde, you know, and the idea of violence was becoming very, very attractive. And you look at films today, and films are extremely violent. I mean,
yes, they
visually
are.
Violent. And I don't care who it is, Italian, American,
sure.
Whoever. And television, too, is the same way, too. I mean, I look at some of these cartoons that my grandkids are looking at, and there's just one that shows one character throughout the entire 20 minutes or so shooting another character. I just don't understand
the
that.
Video games, the
video
cartoons,
games.
Everything is based
so,
on
I mean,
that, yes.
You know, seemingly, there's... There's a popularity in violence,
yes.
Whether it's Italian American or Greek American, wherever. It's just that there's an awful lot of Italian American.
There definitely is.
I
mean, these are facts. These figures. It's a shame because it is a tremendous film.
Yeah.
I read the book. Tremendous book. Yeah. The book is better than the film, as most books are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for hour and 45 minute film, there's no way you could put all of the book in it. So they had to pick and choose.
Well, I'll tell you another interesting fact, and this is very sad too. Do you know that the highest number of lynchings in the United States were Italian Americans?
I didn't know it was the highest, but
in the 1900s in New Orleans, a police chief was killed, and there were a lot of Italian Americans down in New Orleans, and 14 of them were arrested, and they were thrown into jail, and people were so enraged they broke into jail and they lynched 11 of them.
And they lynched them without a trial.
Without a trial or anything. And so that kind of stuff, again, indicates too, hey, there's this terrible feeling for immigrants, particularly Italian immigrants. And in a sense, we're seeing it now with these immigrants that are coming into our country.
Yes.
There's people that just hate these people who come from foreign countries. And I don't think there's going to be a sadder scene than you can see where those people are separated from their children, 2, 3,
definitely.
4 years old. I mean, it's a crime. So
it would be nice. I mean, we've talked on, I've had different interviews where we talked a little bit about it. It's hard to combat this.
Oh, yeah,
if
definitely.
It makes money, they're going to make those films. But what we think always is if we could make some positive movies, if a Coppola, if a Scorsese, who have the power to do that, could make a film in a positive light. Perhaps we've talked in the past about an A.P. Giannini story with Bank of America, things of that nature. You know, I don't have their phone numbers to call them on this, but I wish that they could do things like this. I wish someone could get in their ear about it, because outside of that, I don't think there's a way to stop Hollywood, because... We make money, we're going to make it. It's simple as that, like you said.
Well, you mentioned Scorsese. Did you ever see the film Italian-American?
Yes, I did.
It's a short film about his mother.
Absolutely.
And it's just a great film.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because I always thought to myself, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm sure I'll never have the opportunity, but if I ever had the opportunity to interview him, I would like to talk about that film.
Not
all the other films. Yeah. That film. He was a student, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's about 45 minutes,
about
55 45 minutes.
About 45 minutes.
It's real.
Yeah.
It's his parents in their apartment in wherever they were, Brooklyn, I'm assuming.
She gives the directions to making the Italian sauce at the end.
Yes.
Of the film, and then they print it on there. I said, hey, yeah, that's right. That's good.
I love that film.
Yeah.
Yes. And,
yeah.
and I don't think many people know about that film.
Well, you know, Scorsese's still alive. You can contact him.
I would love to, because that was great. That was enjoyable, entertaining, and for above all, it was real.
It was real.
His parents are real people, real characters,
yeah.
And they represented a huge a mass of people that were like that.
That's right.
It was very interesting. Ralph, this has been very enjoyable.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here, your time, all your knowledge. You're an incredible person, and I thank you for all this information.
Thank you very much. Let me know if it turns out.
Absolutely. And as I always do, ending the show, my words of inspiration to all of you out there, stay strong,
Stay sharp and stay Italian. Thank you. Until our next show.